I'm Abigail.
And I'm Keith.
And this is the Global Treasures Podcast. We'll bring you to a different UNESCO World Heritage site each episode.
These sites have been identified as having outstanding universal value
because they have cultural and/or natural significance that is so exceptional that it transcends national boundaries and is of importance to present and future generations.
There are 1,199 sites across the world, with more being added every year.
We'll explore the history, legends, travel tips, and so much more.
Thanks for joining us for Season 2. If you'd like to support the show, and we hope that you do, you can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and TikTok. Written reviews help others find the podcast as well, so we hope you can leave one.
In this episode, Keith and I will be introducing you to Boyana Church in Bulgaria. So Keith, where in Bulgaria is Boyana Church, and why does UNESCO consider it important enough to designate it as a World Heritage Site?
Yeah, the church is located in Bulgaria's capital, Sofia, in a quiet section within the Boyana Quarter. UNESCO put this on the list originally because it is a gem of medieval history and artistry, which is actually a little different from some of the other religious sites on the list. So while the church, with its three buildings, will not awe a visitor due to the architecture, like some of the incredible cathedrals dotted throughout Europe, the Boyana Church instead houses a treasure trove of medieval artistry within its walls. Built in the 10th century as a private chapel within the Boyana Fortress, it stands as the best example of Bulgaria's rich Orthodox Christian heritage. Its original form, a small one-apse cross-vaulted church, built in the shape of a cross, has since been expanded to three buildings and enriched over the centuries. It's actually the second church that houses the most impressive art, and what I'll talk about the most.
Okay, so it's not the architecture, but the art that blows people away. What can we expect to see inside?
As visitors enter, they're greeted by kind of a breathtaking sight. 89 scenes, each meticulously painted, and featuring 240 human images adorning the walls of the church. These vibrant frescoes dating back to the 11th, 13th, 15th, 16th, and 19th centuries offer a window into Bulgaria's artistic past, each following the model of the Byzantine canon with spiritual expressiveness and vitality.
Okay, so we're talking frescoes and not oil paintings. I was kind of picturing more of like a art museum aesthetic. Got it. So what makes these frescoes so unique, and is anyone famous listeners may have heard of featured in the frescoes?
Yeah, so these frescoes are unique, and I'll start with the notable people. Among the notable figures depicted on the walls is Tsaritsa Eleonora of Bulgaria, the second wife of Tsar Ferdinand, whose patronage helped preserve the church in the early 20th century when it faced the threat of destruction. So the town considered the church too small for their needs and was planning on tearing it down to build a new one. Eleonora feared the loss of such a historic building and purchased a plot of land for the new church, thus saving the original building. Her final resting place lies just south of the church, amidst the park she helped establish, and that's adorned with giant sequoias. Adjacent to the original chapel stands a two-story expansion of the church, commissioned by Sevastokrator Kaloyan and his wife Desislava in the 13th century. This central church, with its intricate ceramic ornaments adorning the exterior, houses a ground floor family sepulcher and an upper floor family chapel, both mimicking the design of the Eastern original church. The crowning glory of the Boyana Church, however, lies in its beautiful and accurate frescoes painted in 1259. These works captivate visitors and academics with their artistic brilliance. Considered one of the most important collections of medieval paintings in Eastern Europe, these frescoes represent a collection of the most completely and perfectly preserved monuments of East European medieval art.
So do we know who the artists were? I'd love to learn a bit more about them and the frescoes themselves.
Yeah, as mentioned earlier, in this second church, there are actually several layers of wall paintings from various centuries. But the ones that are the most impressive and the most culturally important are the paintings made in the year 1259 by a group of unknown artists who now are collectively known as the Boyana Masters. So the journey through the art of Boyana Church begins with fragments of frescoes dating back to the 11th and 12th centuries, offering small glimpses into the original works. Though only small remnants remain, these fragments are pretty good clues to the original frescoes that once covered the entire Eastern Church, but now only offer visitors and academics a view into the techniques used in the earliest part of the history of the church. Parts of these frescoes can be found in the lower part of the north wall, in the upper part of the west wall, and in the southern vault. Yet, as mentioned earlier, it's the famous second layer of frescoes, dating to 1259, that truly steals the spotlight. Preserved with astonishing clarity that impresses those who study these works, these vibrant paintings continue to captivate scholars and visitors alike with their vivid colors and advanced techniques for the time. These frescoes stand as a pinnacle of the Tarnuval school of painting. To art historians, these frescoes played an important part in the development of medieval Bulgarian and European painting. The walls are not the only place that are adorned with art, as both floors of the central church are decorated as well. The religious paintings also follow the rules set forth by the early church.
Interesting. So there were rules about religious paintings in the Catholic Church? I think I heard about this, but I would love to learn more.
Yeah, so the religious paintings during the medieval era were under a set of rules established by the church. The Second Council of Nicaea in 787 AD met in what is now Iznik, Turkey, at the Church of Hagia Sophia. This council attempted to resolve something called the iconoclastic controversy. This controversy was started in 726 when Byzantine Emperor Constantine V issued a decree against the worship of icons, which are religious images of Christ and the saints, but he allowed the images of emperors. This was an effort to give wider authority to imperial power than to the saints and bishops. So as a result of this meeting in 787, the council decreed that every altar should contain a relic, and it also laid out rules as to how images are to be created and worshipped in the 22 canons written during that meeting. The Boyana masters that created the frescoes in the Second Church carefully followed these decrees.
Good to know. I'm sure that's going to come up in future episodes. So give us a rundown of some of the more important works that a visitor should look out for when they're in the church.
So as visitors look upon the walls of the church, they're shown a story of religious iconography and historical narratives. Christ, adorned in vivid colors and surprisingly lifelike for its time, gazes down from the dome, surrounded by a host of angels and the four evangelists. Scenes from the major feast days and the Passion of Christ unfold in surprisingly intricate detail, while saints and martyrs stand in lifelike images throughout the entire church. So among the full-length images of saints in the first tier of the church, there are also 10 warrior saints featured. Also, four impressive images of Christ adorn the faces of the arches, each representing a different version of the prophet in different roles. In the altar is also a very fine example of the Virgin enthroned, surrounded by archangels. Below this are the first four church fathers, St. Gregory the Theologian, Basil the Great, John Chrysostom, and Patriarch Germanus. So as you're approaching the altar, your eyes are drawn to the frescoes flanking both sides, depicting the deacons Laurentius, Epilus, and Stephen, along with the revered figure of St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas is also known as the patron saint of sailors, merchants, and bankers. Moving into the narthex, visitors are greeted by a series of 18 scenes illustrating the life of St. Nicholas. Here, the artists have masterfully woven elements of contemporary life into their depictions, rendering each figure with striking realism. From the bustling marketplaces to the serene seascapes, these scenes offer a glimpse into the world of the medieval Mediterranean, where faith and daily life were very closely related. Above the entrance, a fresco portraying the Virgin and Child alongside St. Anna, St. Joachim, and the benevolent gaze of Christ's blessing. Lower tiers of the walls reveal the likeness of Saints Catherine, Marina, Theodore, Studite, and Pokemios. I think I'm saying that wrong. On the south and the north walls, scenes of the Christian scriptures are represented. In one, Christ disputes with the doctors, while in another, the presentation of the Virgin is tenderly depicted. Among these sacred images stand representations of two highly revered Bulgarian saints, St. John of Rila, in fact the oldest surviving portrayal of the saint, and St. Pekka, the hermit of St. Ephraim, Cyrus, who is an important figure in Christian faith, who was a poet, teacher, orator, and defender of the faith in the early days. The church recognizes him as the doctor of the church.
Very interesting. I know that St. Nicholas is very important to the Bulgarian church because in my research, it felt like every other church was named like Church of St. Nicholas or something along those lines.
Yeah. One of the more popular important pieces in the church to look out for when you visit is the Miracle at Sea, in which St. Nicholas is seen saving what appears to be Venetian sailors from a seawater whirlpool. And it's actually one of the more well-known stories from the saint's life.
Interesting. So any medieval church, and even contemporary ones, often celebrate those who built the church for obvious reasons. Does Boyana Church do the same?
Yeah, this church is no different. And perhaps the most striking of all are the portraits of the church patrons, Sevastokrator Kaloyan and his wife Desislava. So these two are painted with extraordinary precision and feeling. These lifelike depictions are captioned in amazing detail, considering the time that these paintings were made. I know I mentioned this before, but these are two of the most celebrated images in the church.
I feel like I sound like a broken record because I just keep saying interesting, but there is just so much more to this than I expected. Can you describe the artwork just a bit more since there's so much of it?
Yeah, finally, on the north wall, the portraits of Bulgarian Tsar Konstantin Tik and Tsaritsa Irina command the attention as they're among the oldest portraits of figures from Bulgarian history, and thus very important to scholars and cultural heritage alike. Further pieces were added to the frescoes dating from the 14th to the 17th centuries, as well as additions from the year 1882. These later additions, although fewer in number, add to the richness of the art of the church. Among these include a scene depicting the Presentation of the Virgin, which was painted in the 14th century, and further portraits of St. Nicholas painted in the 16th and 17th centuries. Adding to the further history of the church, representations of the two patron saints of the church, St. Nicholas and St. Pantelimon, were crafted in 1882.
Okay, so you've made it clear that these frescoes are old, almost 1,000 years. I know frescoes aren't known for surviving well, considering the techniques that were known in medieval times. What's been done to ensure the artwork is still as vivid as we see it today?
Yeah, you're very right. So the techniques used by the Boyana masters were way ahead of their time, and a subject of study of art historians. Also, over the years, the church has undergone periods of restoration and preservation, ensuring that its frescoes endure. In 1912 to 1915, cleaning efforts by Austrian and Bulgarian specialists revived the artwork, a task then again repeated in 1934 and once again in 1944. Declared a national antiquity and protected by the state in 1927, the church actually still remained an active parish until 1954.
So if my math is right, it was declared a UNESCO site about 25 years later.
Yep. As we mentioned in the beginning of 1979, the church's cultural significance was recognized on a global scale when it was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Under the guardianship of a branch of the National History Museum since 2003, the church underwent further extensive restoration efforts, culminating in its partial reopening to the public in 2006, and then a full opening on October 2, 2008. Modern amenities such as air conditioning and low-light heating were installed to preserve the delicate frescoes. Today, under the careful management of the National Historic Museum, Boyana Church welcomes over 200,000 visitors annually, offering guided tours to groups of up to 10 people for a duration of about 10 minutes each. With talk of the careful methods in which the church controls the visitors to ensure the frescoes aren't damaged, I guess now would be a great transition time to talk about how to visit the church and what to expect when traveling there. So Abigail, this is your area, and I would love to hear what you discovered because I kind of want to get here.
Sure. So if you're traveling to Bulgaria from a different country, you'll want to fly into Sofia International Airport, which is their major international airport. It's less than 10 miles from the city itself. If you're located in a major European city, you have the option to take a train as well, which is comfortable and a scenic mode of transportation. Seriously, the trains feel like part of the vacation experience itself because you often get amazing views of the mountains and other scenery.
Yeah, the train system is one of my favorite parts of traveling Europe. You can literally get almost anywhere, and all the trains are sleek and modern. Again, I also consider an awesome part of any trip to Europe. All right, so I mentioned earlier that the site gets close to 200,000 visitors each year, but I guess the visit is in a highly controlled manner, so what's the best way to get inside?
Yes, given the number that they garner each year, buying tickets in advance is highly recommended, although it's not technically required. The cost is pretty low as well, and it's nearly free if you're a student. You can buy combination tickets for the church and Zemeski Monastery St. John the Theologian, which is one of the oldest tributes to medieval Bulgarian culture. Just know you can't take pictures inside, and it appears you'll be in and out in under 20 or so minutes because they limit the amount of time you can spend. And only 10 people max can be in the church at a time.
So with that many visitors, maybe there's a better time to visit? So what's the best time to go? And any places to stay? And of course, what's the food like in the area?
Always he brings up the food. So in terms of the best time of the year to go, I'm going to say the weather, per usual, is a good guide. I'm not sure I could point to Monday or Sunday or any specific day being the best time to go. The months between May and September have average temperatures ranging between 65 degrees Fahrenheit and 80 degrees Fahrenheit, with a less likelihood of rain, so it's quite lovely. So there are literally hundreds of hotels, from major chains, high-end boutiques, bed and breakfasts, homestays, just so many options. Given over 1.6 million people live in Sofia, and it's a popular tourist destination, no surprise there. Okay, now on to your favorite subject, the food. There are hundreds of cafes, food markets, bakeries, fast food, and fine dining options, with most cuisines available that you can imagine. One of the national dishes that's frequently served is banitsa, and it's considered a must-try, or at least for me.
Banitsa? I've actually never heard of this, and just the name sounds great. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Yeah, it's a flaky pastry that usually has sweet fruit fillings or eggs and cheese if it's being served as a main course dish. I looked up some recipes, and it seems like it can be served hot or cold. Also, as mentioned in previous episodes, pierogi are a dumpling with sweet or savory fillings that is commonly served in restaurants, usually with applesauce or sour cream and fried onions, so that might be of interest to travelers as well.
Yeah, pierogies are one of my favorites. All right, so these sites all have legends surrounding them, and some are even paranormal. And this is your area of expertise, Abigail. So what are some stories that a visitor can keep in mind when going there?
This week, I have a true story about a woman named Baba Vanga. She was a self-proclaimed healer and mystic who stated she had the power to see the future. So just a little backstory about her. She was blinded in childhood after being thrown by a hurricane. Fast forward to World War II, when Yugoslavia was invaded by the Axis powers. Somehow, Vanga started to bring in business as a fortune teller, with people coming from far and wide, so she could tell them if their loved ones were alive. Even Tsar Boris III went to her for guidance. The Bulgarian police and army tried to stop her at one point, but her popularity preceded her, and she drew people to her nonetheless. Eventually, her influence was so great, and people believed so deeply in her psychic powers, if you will, that she got a job with the Institute of Suggestology, which is a legitimate part of the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences. They even tried to prove scientifically that her so-called gifts were legitimate. She became so renowned that even Leonid Brezhnev and members of the Bulgarian Communist Party consulted her. Supposedly, in her lifetime, she predicted the following events, all of which did come true: the breakup of the Soviet Union, the Chernobyl disaster, the date of Stalin's death, Princess Diana's death, and her own death from breast cancer in the 1990s. How specific these predictions were, no one can really say. But for true believers, she was the real deal, and she still has many loyal, devoted followers throughout the world who post about her online all the time.
Oh, that's kind of an amazing story. I didn't know anything about that. But I gotta ask, how is this related to the church? Is she featured in the artwork that I didn't see, or did she attend the church? Was she recognized as part of the worshippers at the church? I didn't come across any of this in my research.
No, I thought it was interesting because A, she's world famous, and B, the Bulgarian Orthodox Church has not been her biggest fan historically and doesn't like that she always associated herself with the religion.
All right, I guess I can see the connection. I'm also guessing the church didn't like the hint of magic in this one, huh?
No, not at all. If she had powers, they viewed it as black magic of sorts, or they figured that she was just a shyster with no values or morals, taking advantage of people who were struggling emotionally. But many religions do prohibit seeking divination because only God knows the future. I also brought it up because a lot of people make the couple-hour detour to go to the Baba Vanga House Museum while in Bulgaria, as Petrik is also home to hot springs and some other things to do as well.
Ooh, that must be an interesting museum to take a look at. All right, so transitioning here, I know we spoke briefly about the measures that are being taken to keep this site safe. How does the future of the site look? I know this is another thing that you normally look into.
So I'm excited to say there aren't many issues that face this site. It seems to be very well preserved. In addition to the extensive cleaning that's been done to the frescoes in the early to mid-1900s, there are other projects that have been completed to protect them, such as putting in air conditioning with centralized control and even remote monitoring, as well as other equipment for conservation of the wall paintings in the church. They were approved to get dehumidifying equipment, but it appears they didn't actually end up putting it in based on my research, so I'm not quite sure what happened there. I know you mentioned that air conditioning equipment can serve the same purpose as the dehumidifiers, so that may be why. But I'm excited to report that the future seems bright here, and that future generations will definitely be able to enjoy this incredible church for years to come. Thank you for listening to the Global Treasures podcast.
We'll see you next time when we explore Bryggen, the old wharf of Bergen, Norway.